You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ramil, a credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. I'm here with Bay Area News Group reporter Wes Goldberg, former co-host of mine on Locked On Heat, of course, still my co-host on Locked On NBA, as well as the host of Locked On Warriors. How are you doing, Wes?
I'm great. I am in South Florida, so I'm not necessarily reporting on the Miami Heat, but I feel like I am. I feel more reconnected to my roots here. So yeah. It's been great. This is what, the second time in 2 weeks I've been on the show?
Yeah. I mean, the people demanded it. We got emails. I got some messages on Twitter. It seems like everybody wants you back on the show, despite whatever your past might be. Of course, now if Miami winds up losing game three, then maybe that'll change completely. But for now, at least, it seems like you're still in their good graces. So that's a positive. But that is the reason why we're here talking. It's the Milwaukee Bucks versus the Miami Heat. And, of course, the Heat have taken the first two games of that series. A little surprising, perhaps, but it also feels like, I feel like vindicated somehow, because it feels like you and I have been talking about this for a while, even prior to the season, that Miami just was a team that could knock off the Bucks despite Giannis Antetokounmpo and all the players on the Heat, from Jimmy Butler to Goran Dragic, even Jay Crowder, a guy who both of us have talked about being a great fit in Miami for years prior to his acquisition this year. He's actually been fitting well and playing at such a high level. I'm feeling pretty good about myself. I don't like getting cocky. I don't want to pat myself on the back too much, but damn, this feels pretty good.
Listen, it just adds to our credibility, because we got on the show after the Pacers series, looking forward to the Bucks series. You and I agreed. This is a really evenly matched series, despite it being a 1-5 series, right? I mean, Milwaukee, of course, has the best record in the league, et cetera, MVP, two-time MVP with Giannis, all that stuff, but Miami just matches up with them so well. And every way I looked at it, David, I really tried to look at it and say, why will the Heat lose this series? And I couldn't find a real reason other than, unless Giannis just goes superhuman, it's going to be really, really evenly matched. And so far, if anything, the Heat have been the better team in the two games. I think that much is borne out pretty clearly. Think whatever you want of how game two ended with all the fouls. I think both teams, bottom line, both teams got screwed by the refs in the final seconds of that game. Miami has been the better team for two games now. Giannis is having a real problem, and this is not unique to this series. This is unique to, you know, the last couple of years. Every time he plays Miami, they just have him figured out. And I look at the way that, like, you know, Giannis had a hard time with Al Horford for years. I think he's having that same thing with Miami. There's just a wall, literally and figuratively, for Giannis when it comes to playing the Heat. And if he is anything other than, you know, 35 points, 15 rebounds, 8 assists, whatever, like MVP caliber numbers, if he is anything less than that, then I think the Heat have a pretty decisive advantage in this series.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm one of the things I mentioned in yesterday's recap was that Giannis tends to kind of take over games sometimes to his detriment, in the sense that he tries to single-handedly will his team to a victory. And more right. often than not, it works. But against a team like Miami that is so deep and so capable of figuring out everybody else in that roster to some degree, I think it kind of backfires on him. And so he would have to put up those uber efficient numbers where he's also getting people engaged and making plays for others. Cause if it's just him going downhill or finding that spin move or, you know, creating or getting through traffic to get to the rim, that's not going to be enough. And, you know, he had a big game too. It just wasn't big enough. And that's with some solid right. performances from everybody else too.
Well, I want to go back to what Doris Burke said on the broadcast. I thought it was very astute. She said, basically, when Giannis is getting into force it mode, he likes to, and he's not able to go full court, fast break, like he likes to do, because we know in the playoffs you get a lot fewer of those fast break opportunities, only because teams take care of the ball better than they do in the regular season. And so in lieu of that, if he's in the half court, he likes to try to get downhill and then go to that left way spin move. And the Heat have that scouted really, really well, specifically Jay Crowder. They know exactly what he's going to go to. He has his pet moves. I don't know, it reminds me a little bit of pre-Miami Heat LeBron James, where he did tend to just try to force and take games over, yes. and sometimes it would work. But it takes that extra level of, okay, how can I be unselfish? How can I do this? How can I create my own shot? How can I, you know, develop an 18-foot jumper and then kind of eventually extend out to the three-point line? Giannis has yet to hit that part of his development. Yeah. And we're seeing that that has real because it's not just him, but Chris Middleton can't really create his own shot. Eric Bledsoe can't really create his own shot. I mean, we're talking about a team that thrives in the open court and needs to get turnovers in order to generate offense. And in the half court, they have a real hard time. While Miami is very good in transition, they have one of the best transition defenses in the league. We've seen a number of stops even against the Bucks in transition, but they can also function in the half court, which we see with even not just Jimmy Butler, but a guy like Tyler Hero and other guys. They just have so many weapons. Like you said, seven guys scored in double figures in game two. That's huge.
Unbelievable, yeah. Just a quick point on Giannis. I feel like I can't remember now because, of course, the last few months feels like a decade plus. But was it last offseason when Giannis said he was still at just, what, 60% and he wanted to continue to work to get better?
Right.
And I remember you and I debating something about that on Locked on NBA. You know, now that I think about it, at the time, I think we both kind of were like, well, that doesn't seem quite right. Although there were obvious gaps in his game, but looking at his limitations in this series in particular, that kind of stands out a little bit more where you can tell that you're right. He absolutely needs to figure out those kind of nuances of when to pull up for the jumper, when to have that kind of find that seam in the defense, when to get everybody else going in a game like that. And he's just not at that point quite yet. And so, you know, maybe it's time for him to join Miami the way LeBron did. Cause I think, if not Miami, at least to find another coach who can maximize his talent and get him to that next level. Cause it's pretty clear that there is a next level. As powerful as he is, as great a player as he's been over the last couple seasons, it seems like it's pretty obvious, I think, to me and to you that there's another level for him to reach.
Absolutely. And you know, it's all those things about just creating your own shot. This is what did him in against Kawhi last year.
Right.
It's what's going to set him apart. It's why I still don't have him as my number one player in the league. I have him somewhere in between 3 and 4 right now. And look, if you're Giannis and you end up losing to Miami, Miami's going to look like a really enticing location when you're a free agent in 2021 and they have the cap space. Yeah.
So you must be feeling pretty good about the job Eric Spoelstra has done, because I think it's...
Oh, my God.
It seems pretty obvious that Budenholzer just has not found a way, or is, moreover, perhaps, not willing to make the adjustments that might be necessary for them to win. Like, he's just not put Giannis or the other ball handlers in position to find effective seams in the defense. They're just not playing the kind of minutes that you would in a crucial game two situation. I don't know what's going on. And I know there were some extenuating circumstances due to the foul calls and everything else, but it's just... You look at Budenholzer, and he doesn't seem to be willing to make any kind of changes whatsoever.
No, and it's so weird, right? I mean, I think the changes are pretty obvious that he needs to make, and you know, he's giving Frank Mason minutes here and there, and he's I don't understand the logic, and it seems quite clear that you can't just stagger Brook Lopez and Giannis the entire game and expect it to work. It very much seems like they're like in that first quarter. It was basically, what was it, Brook Lopez and the Miami Heat were tied at 9-9 or something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
And it's because Giannis is able to drive the lane, create that wall, and kick out to Brook Lopez in the corner. And then he basically just goes away from that for the rest of the game. And I do credit Spoelstra, too. I mean, I don't know exactly what adjustment he made, but it didn't happen again. I think it's partly whatever Spoelstra did adjustment-wise defensively. And just Budenholzer saying, you know what, I've decided to stagger Brook Lopez and Giannis, and I'm not going to not do that under any circumstance. It just seems weird to me. Like, just put those guys on the floor together for as many minutes as possible if you want to get an advantage. Not playing Giannis sometimes the way he does. I think Eric Spoelstra has coached an almost flawless series. The only thing I would say is maybe he probably should have put Jimmy Butler in the game earlier in the fourth quarter Wednesday night than he did. But, you know, overall, it didn't. They still won the game, so it's hard to knock him for it. It's clear to me that Eric Spoelstra is going to coach circles around Budenholzer. And we got, again, going back to that conversation you and I had before the series started, we asked, what's the gap between Giannis and Jimmy Butler? And what's the gap between Spo and Coach Bud? And that gap might end up dictating the series. And I think so far, Bud has been much better than Bud than Giannis has been than Jimmy Butler. You could argue that Butler has been better than Giannis, you could argue, in the series so far, let alone Spo just being miles and miles ahead of Budenholzer.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm glad you brought up that episode that we had recorded prior to the series. So we'll get into it a little bit more in the next segment. I'm here talking with Wes Goldberg of Locked On Warriors. Stay tuned. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Subscribe to the show on your favorite app to listen to podcasts and always get the latest episode by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat when you get in your car to get your team every day. Goran Dragic continues to impress, and I feel like I keep talking about him, but his performance in this series just continues to show people on a national level how determined he is and how capable a scorer is. It's something that we've known for a while, but again, and talking about how validated and vindicated we are as a result of this series, like Goran's performance now, considering how maligned he was over the last couple seasons prior to Jimmy Butler joining this team, I'm feeling pretty good about his addition because it just seems like he is so locked in, finding such a comfort zone with his offense, whether it's attacking the paint, finding a way to get that floater up over Brook Lopez as he protects the paint, or of course knocking down the shot. He's been shooting so well from the perimeter. I cannot say enough about Goran Dragic, so I'm going to give you the opportunity to wax poetic about him.
I appreciate that. No, I mean, it was funny going in between game one and two, every Bucks fan was like, well, if Eric Bledsoe was there, that wouldn't have happened. And it's
yeah,
like, look,
that was the difference maker right there.
Right. Goran Dragic isn't like some scrub. Like, this is not Joe Schmo coming off the bench and score. And by the way, neither is George Hill. George Hill, as we understand it, is one of the best point of attack defenders in the league. And he had a hard time with Goran Dragic. So what was the difference between George Hill and Eric Bledsoe? Well, Goran Dragic scored 25 points instead of 27. So congratulations, Eric Bledsoe. I just look, he got to the rim whenever he wanted, right away against Bledsoe. He just couldn't stop him. And that's just sort of been Dragic. He's playing, by the way, right now better than I think he ever has in Miami. And look, credit to the Heat for bringing him off the bench in the regular season. Maybe give a little bit of credit to the long, layoff there. He looks healthier than he has in a really long time. He looks fresh. I mean, this is FIBA level Goran Dragic that we're seeing.
Well, that's a good comparison. I'm glad you brought it up because he mentioned in today's presser how the environment in the Orlando bubble feels a lot like EuroLeague, where you're kind of locked in.
Awesome. So he's in his comfort zone.
Yeah. This is absolutely. He compared the vibe around this team right now to what he experienced with the Slovenian national team a couple of years ago when they won the Euro Cup. So I mean, I'm not saying that the Heat are going to win a title, but I'm not saying it. How about that?
The other thing I like about Goran Dragic too is very similar to Spoelstra. If you show him something once, he's going to adjust for it. And early in that first quarter, like I said, he was getting to the rim, but he wasn't finishing the way he was in game one. Because Brook Lopez was there, because they were doing they were crowding him a little bit more, and he saw it, and then he was efficient after that. And he's so, again, we use this word all the time with him, crafty, but he really is. He has so many moves that he can go to. He has that little show you the dribble at his waist and then go up. He's got the iron shoulder. He's got the spin move. He's got the Euro step. He's developed this incredible, like, stop on a dime and fade away from like 15, 16 feet. You know, he's got the floater that he's always had. He's got so many moves in his bag that he's been Miami's best offensive player in these playoffs. And look, man, you said that you're not going to go as far as to pick them for the championship. Like, I don't want to, I'm just going to knock on wood the whole way here, but, they right now they're up 2-0. Boston is up 2-0 on Toronto, and I think that's where we're going with the Eastern Conference Finals. And the way that they're playing, they've not lost a game in these playoffs, man. Like, they have, they have as good a chance as anybody right now in the East.
You know, I have to agree with you, but at the same time, listening to the Low Post earlier today talking about the series, he believes that the Bucks are going to find a way to even it up to get back into the series. Kevin Arnowitz, who was his guest on the show, agrees with him. I mean, that's the concern too, is that there's no traveling back, there's no home court advantage, everybody's in the bubble, et cetera.
Well, so what was their reasoning?
They think that Milwaukee's too talented and that Budenholzer will eventually make some adjustments. They didn't really, I didn't hear any kind of specific reasons that I think were truly valid. It just kind of seems like, well, they have a hunch or a feeling that eventually Milwaukee can find ways to get around what Miami does well. But it just hasn't been the case. And that's what I wanted to bring up to you is that, you know, the feeling is you don't want to get too cocky. And obviously we're not emotionally involved in the outcome of the series, but watching the series, you know, as a reporter, you kind of look at it and you recognize that Miami is just clearly playing better than Milwaukee. And I don't know what Milwaukee can do well. Like I pointed this out in the recap yesterday. Game one was such a different game where you had Jimmy Butler exploding and you had a bad game from Giannis. In game two, you have a great game from Giannis. Jimmy doesn't have to contribute all that much and you still have a way to win. Like just what Miami does well is something that Milwaukee can't compensate for. And I think that's a strength of their roster. It's a strength of their coaching. They just know how to handle everything that the Bucks seem to throw at them. And you can't, I don't know what the counter is for the Bucks at this point. So I guess you kind of want to hedge your bets and say, well, there's a good chance that Bucks will find a way to come back, but I'm not quite sure how. And I know that from a listener's perspective, you're probably going, well, you know, that's your job as somebody who covers the league, but could they tweak some plays? Could they play Giannis 40 minutes instead of just 36? Maybe, but I don't know that that's necessarily going to translate into anything, you know, tangible where it's going to lead to a Bucks victory.
Yeah, look, I think if you get a combination of Giannis doing what he did Wednesday night and some better three-point shooting from Milwaukee, they could basically win the game, right? Like, they missed a bunch of open shots. I think both teams could do a better job of not fouling open shooters. And so that should translate at some point. But look, Giannis is probably at some point going to have an MVP-caliber game and win the Bucks a game that way. So, nobody expects Miami to sweep them. But why would we think that Budenholzer is going to make the adjustments necessary to come back in this? And let's say even if he does, let's say that Budenholzer makes some big time adjustments between games two and three. Eric Spoelstra is going to make adjustments within the first quarter based on Budenholzer's adjustments. And we've established here, this is not an opinion at this point. It's a fact that Spoelstra is a better coach than Budenholzer. It is bearing out right in front of us. Within the first quarter, Spo's going to make the necessary adjustments most likely and then counter whatever Bud did. And nobody expects Bud to make those in-game adjustments because historically he hasn't. I think the Spo factor is a real one. I think that, unless Giannis can just play at an MVP level, Milwaukee doesn't have a chance. And so the real question becomes, can Giannis play at an MVP level against Miami's defense 4 out of the next 6 games? And if it's anything short of that, David, it, the answer is that the Miami Heat win the series.
Yeah, I think that's fair. What did you make a pick for in the series? I can't recall now if I asked you to put your guess, your prediction on the line.
I don't know if I told you my pick, but I had felt like the Heat were going to win this series.
Yeah. I had picked Heat in 6. I thought it was going to be a lot more even. It still looks like it could play out that way. I could see the next 4 games going win by Milwaukee, win by Miami, win by Milwaukee, then a closeout game 6. That seems pretty fair. I mean, at this point, you have to think that Milwaukee will try to find a way to do something differently and perhaps respond. I'm still not sure what that is. I Eric Bledsoe had a pretty solid game in game 2. If not defensively, at least from a scoring output, he got a lot of friendly whistles that put him on the line. Middleton has been solid overall, although he's kind of waned in the second half of both games. But Giannis again had a big game too. I mean, they've gotten key contributions from everybody else. It's their bench too. I mean, let's be honest. Tyler Hero and Kelly Olynyk outscored the Bucks bench single-handedly, in game 2. So they've been very bad. They're not getting any kind of output from Pat Connaughton or Kyle Korver. Marvin Williams has been pretty shaky. It's just, I don't know. I don't know if this is just a bad matchup or if it's just so many different things playing in Miami's favor. But let's talk a little bit more about the series in the next segment. This is Wes Goldberg here with David Ramil, and you're listening to Locked On Heat. Reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. I don't know how else to kind of take it from here. I got to be honest with you. I'm going on like 3 hours sleep. Last night was not a great one after recording the podcast. My son decided to wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning. So I am I don't have my full faculties with me, but I'm so excited to be able to talk to you about this series because it seems like it's breaking so well in Miami's favor. I keep looking at Jay Crowder as perhaps Miami's biggest X factor. I didn't think he was going to be handling the responsibilities of guarding Giannis as completely as he has. And he has not been the only defender on Giannis, but he has been the primary one. And of course, it starts with Jay, and then it kind of helps with everybody else sagging off their own individual assignments and forming that wall. And we've seen the images here. If you have not gone, I mean, it's all over the NBA Twitter sphere, but I mean, go and take a look at some of the replays or anything like that. You can see how effective they've been in just forming that wall. And keeping Giannis from his comfort zone. It's been so impressive to see them implement that strategy. Look, it's not like they developed it. Obviously, we saw it from Toronto last postseason as well. But Miami has been very, very good at maximizing everybody. And even Tyler Hero, Goran Dragic, guys that aren't exactly known for their defense, have been able to contribute to this. So that's been pretty impressive. Has anything stood out to you about Crowder or anybody else on the Heat roster?
Well, absolutely. But number one, just as far as a team, not only are they getting more shot creation, which the Heat have, like I already said, Milwaukee doesn't have shot creators. They don't. Like, Giannis is the biggest one they have, and he can't really shoot off the, he can't create off the dribble. Miami has Jimmy Butler. They have Goran Dragic. They have Tyler Hero, who does not look like a rookie in the situation. Like, Tyler Hero, you could argue, is a better off the dribble shot creator than anybody Milwaukee has, and he's 20. Bam Adebayo, in two games, has made some really big fourth quarter mid-range jump shots that are very reminiscent of Chris Bosh. And speaking of Chris Bosh, the defense, to go back to your wall, the way that they're able to form that wall in front of Giannis, and once Giannis kicks out, right, force him to get the ball out of his hands, the way they're able to close out and stunt and do those things is so reminiscent of the Big Three era, defense on a string, Chris Bosh at center, Shane Battier, you know, LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, Mario Chalmers, that group, the way that they were able to defend on a string, we are seeing that level of defense from this Miami Heat group, which is what it takes against Milwaukee. That's why Toronto was able to do what they did against him last year, because they had guys like Kawhi, Pascal Siakam, and Kyle Lowry. Miami has so many defenders, and then they can go to their bench and bring back like Andre Iguodala off the bench. And you know, Derrick Jones Jr. Had a really important 7 minutes for Miami in that game too. And you know, other than a couple of fouls, looked like he knew what he was doing, and you could expect him to make those adjustments going further. So, you know, I think Miami's so deep, and it, honestly, you talk about Jay Crowder there. I've been so impressed with him. By the way, not only did he play great defense on Giannis again in game two, dude took 12 three-pointers in the game. I mean, the guy has so much confidence, and he's exactly what this team needs. And I just wonder, if this team beats Milwaukee, regardless of what happens in the next round, I think you just run it back, right? Like, you just re-sign Crowder, you re-sign Dragic, and you just run it back next year, and you just hope for continued development from guys like Bam and Hero and Duncan Robinson.
Yeah, that's fair. Look, I mean, Crowder's shooting 37% in the series. He is 7 of 19 on three-point attempts through the first two games, and it just seems like he's going to get a lot more of those open looks because, well, I mean, he's just been, as they continue to work their way past multiple screens, trying to get to the room or to the rim, if they can't find an open look, they'll kick it out to the perimeter, and he's just evolved into an incredible spot-up shooter. So, he's been effective. He's been really, really solid as a defender, but offensively, he's just helping Miami. He's just doing enough to really help provide a significant cushion over the Bucks as they mount these comebacks. But what's your take on the officiating? Because I see a lot of, I think, Bucks fans in particular kind of using that as an excuse. I know you kind of hinted at it in the first segment, and I talked about it after the recap there, but I don't think it's fair to diminish what Miami has done and just kind of lay blame on the officiating. I know it kind of came down to the last few seconds there, but it certainly helped Milwaukee, I think. That Chris Middleton, well, the Goran Dragic foul on Chris Middleton was, I think, one of the worst I've ever seen. Yeah, I've never seen anything like it. I couldn't believe the broadcast team and, of course, what's his name? Steve Javy.
He's never disagreed with a referee call in his life. He's completely a biased observer. He always agrees with the refs. It's ridiculous. No, Doris Burke was absolutely right. It was a terrible call, especially in that moment. You don't make it. But the refs kind of made up for it. I actually believe they made up. they realized they kind of screwed up and were a little bit more lenient on that Jimmy Butler foul. I think they realized they screwed up there. But like the thing I would ask Bucks fans who want to complain about the officiating, and go ahead, complain about the officiating. Both teams got screwed in the final seconds of that game. And by the way, as an aside, I actually think the officiating has been pretty consistent. Like both teams shot about the same amount of free throws so far in this series. They have been pretty consistent in calling almost everything the entire game. So that's like, I think they're calling way too many fouls. Like these games need to be about 20 minutes shorter, but they're at least been consistent in calling everything until like the final 2 or 3 minutes. And then they said in games 1 and 2 have let them play for the most part outside of the final seconds of game 2. Overall, I would ask Bucks fans, have the Heat not outplayed the Bucks thoroughly in the first two games? Like, you could argue that whatever you think of the officiating, but the Heat have been arguably outplayed Milwaukee, not just from, you know, the points and the shooting and all that stuff, but like I said, they are hustling for rebounds and loose balls in ways that Milwaukee is just not. The coach is making adjustments better than Milwaukee's is. They've just been better, man. Like, they've just been better through two games, and they've deserved to win both of these games.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. It's hard to argue otherwise, but you look at everything that Miami's been able to do, and they're just so effective at it. And it's just – I think it's caught a lot of people by surprise, but it's sort of been building towards this all year. Like, you saw what Miami was able to do during the regular season, and with the combination of the way their offense runs – with their passing ability, with their shooting ability, it seems like it kind of complementary puzzle pieces. If Miami had all the parts in place to exploit all of Milwaukee's obvious weaknesses, they have it, and that's why it's led to a 2-0 deficit at this point. So I don't know. I mean, I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about adjustments, but I don't know that there are any. We keep rehashing this. I know you could probably do things a little differently as far as the rotations. You can put Giannis in more pick and roll type situations where he can get a little bit more, space to get downhill and get to the rim a little bit easier. But I don't know that that's necessarily going to be effective either.
Yeah,
Is there anything?
I think that's what you're going to see. You're probably going to see like this James Harden level, Damian Lillard level, like super high pick and rolls, like almost at half court just to get Giannis onto a matchup and go downhill. I can see like Jay Crowder's done a nice job. I don't know who you try to switch onto him if like, maybe like Duncan Robinson in the starting lineup. So what like you would have Wes Matthews come up and set a screen for Giannis. Like I could see something like that happening. But then, you know, that leaves Bam Adebayo on the back line to come out with help defense. Like I trust Miami's defense on a string, but that's maybe the only adjustment is more really high level screen and rolls and just try to get Giannis downhill.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm at a loss for words because it's exceeded my expectations. As positive as I was, and it's been pretty apparent that Miami has been very good during the playoffs so far. I think they've played extremely well. They figured out Milwaukee better than any other team has, and they've done a very, very good job. So it's been a fun series so far. I'm sure it'll continue that way. Even if somehow Milwaukee finds a way to even up the series, I like Miami's chances at trying to extend their postseason run because it's been impressive so far. I don't know if you have any thoughts on Boston Celtics. That's a bad matchup. Look, we're kind of dismissing the Toronto Raptors the same way a lot of people are the Milwaukee Bucks. A 2-0 deficit is not easy to overcome, especially when you don't have the advantage of going back home and trying to find some inspiration from your home crowd. I'm sure Miami would love to be going back to the American Airlines Arena where they played so well in front of their home fans. Unfortunately, they don't have that luxury. It's going to remain in the Orlando bubble in the foreseeable future. So,
unfortunately, Toronto doesn't have the overrated Jurassic Park to go back to, but,
had to go in there, had to go and throw a dig at the Jurassic Park.
I did.
Stay on brand, man. Stay on brand.
It has no effect on the game whatsoever. It does not mean that they're good fans. I just think that what we're seeing between Boston and Miami is the fact that, look, Milwaukee has a nice structure in place. They have an MVP. Like, they're a very good team, great defense. Toronto, unbelievable defense, very deep. They're able to score in numbers and all these things. But what Boston and what Miami has that those teams don't have is an elite shot creator. And that is the most important skill in the NBA. We see it every year in the playoffs. We almost forget about it in every regular season. And every playoffs, it becomes the most important skill. It's why Kawhi is what he is, why LeBron has been able to do what he's done. and why the Heat and why the Celtics right now are winning their series 2-0, because the Celtics have Jason Tatum to do that, and the Heat have had Jimmy Butler to do that. And that's pretty much, I think, what these come down to when you have two evenly matched teams. And when a lot of these games, with the exception of game one between Boston and Toronto, come down to the final minutes, right? Is you just need the guy to just go do something. And yeah, it's Boston, Miami who's had that guy.
Well, if Miami does wind up advancing, the Celtics do, I hope I can bring you back on the show so you can slander Brad Stevens some more. I know he is not quite the coach Eric Spoelstra is, so.
It would be my pleasure.
I know it wouldn't take much prompting on my part. Anyway, thanks so much for coming on the show. Thank you for taking the time. I know you're on vacation, lounging poolside as always, a well-earned vacation. So enjoy the rest of your trip. And make sure, if you're listening to the show, to continue to subscribe and follow this podcast to get the latest episode of Locked On Heat as soon as it's out. I'm David Ramil. That's Wes Goldberg. We're signing off and thanking you as always for your support.